Attention listeners, we're excited to announce that AfterSight will be moving to our new office on March 26th. As we make this transition, our services will be down most of the day. We apologize for any inconvenience, but truly appreciate your understanding as we start this new chapter. Thank you for listening to AfterSight.
You're listening to an AINC original podcast. We believe you don't have to do life without a compass. Let us be your guide on this amazing journey. Welcome to Navigating Life with Vision Loss.
Hello, this is Kim Wardlow. I am your host for NLVL. Thank you for joining us today as we continue talking about emergency preparedness. And last week, we were talking about putting together a to-go bag and making a plan for yourself, for your family. So kind of in-home, when you're at home and an emergency occurs, maybe you need to evacuate or those types of things of being in your home. And this week, we are going to move outside and talk about situations that may occur outside of the home. And how you can prepare or be able to be thoughtful about how you react in an emergency that's happens outside of your home. We're going to be joined again today by Liz Botner. And again, I'll just let you know she's an advocate, accessibility advocate, and assistive technology specialist, and especially focused on empowering individuals with low vision. So Liz is joining us again here today. So thank you, Liz, for coming back for a second episode.
Thank you for having me.
So we talked a bit last week about how you need to be somewhat flexible in situations because they're never exactly how you might anticipate or plan for, and just giving yourself some grace. But I could see where that might apply even more so as we're starting to look again at outside of the home and public spaces when things happen that are emergencies. What do you see as some of the biggest accessibility challenges for someone who is in a public space during an emergency?
Not being familiar with that public space, mm-hmm. and not being completely familiar with how to navigate getting yourself from where you are to where you need to be, because emergencies don't always happen in familiar spaces. Right. Or even if the space is familiar, sometimes in an emergency situation, that can kind of go out the window because you're just so focused on, oh my gosh, I need to get out of here. And never mind, you have alarms blaring or PA announcements blaring on the speaker. You know, so it's, you know, yes, you might have been familiar with the space, but are you as familiar with that space in an emergency situation? That answer might be no.
Mm-hmm. And even just certainly if there's a fire alarm or some alarm that is loud, you're going to realize there's an emergency situation. But just realizing what's happening around you and being able to assess what is happening when you don't have the visual cues.
Absolutely. That's probably step one, actually. Never mind being familiar or not with the space that you're in. But step one is realizing what the heck is going on or is not going on, as the case may be. But, you know, and it's maybe a little bit easier if you are in your workplace or a place that is familiar enough to you and you're familiar enough to the coworkers that you're with, and you can kind of navigate that. And maybe you've been through drills before with different types of emergencies. So that may not be as frustrating of a situation as it might be if you were in, say, a grocery store or mm-hmm. a shopping area or watching a hockey game. And, you know, I mean, that's not something that you can usually go into and practice being in an emergency situation in those situations.
Right. And you may or may not be with someone.
Absolutely.
Which is helpful. I think no matter what, your vision, if you're with someone, that just provides some reassurance, but you might not be if you're in a grocery store or shopping or something like that.
Correct.
How can someone with low vision or blindness prepare themselves to navigate spaces? Like, as you said, it may depend if you're at work, you know, you'd have time to be able to familiarize yourself with the layout of the building, those types of things. A workplace may have an emergency, you know, an evacuation kind of plan. But is there any way to prepare yourself for those situations where you're not in a familiar environment?
With technology being what it is nowadays, if you have a smartphone, you can most likely tap into your local area's emergency alerts whether it's via text or an app. And so you will get notification when there is an emergency. Sometimes it's even specific to a workplace. But so then you would hopefully be notified what is happening. And so that is really important. And that is something that I myself take advantage of, because it's, you know, there may not be people around to ask what's going on. Mm-hmm. Or even if there are, there may not be people, I may not be able to hear an answer that someone is giving me. Mm-hmm. I also may not be able to hear my phone talk to me. So that may that may not actually work as well as I would want it to. But just having a way to, you know, at least have some sort of notification as much as you can within your scope of that. And that, you know, whether it's, as I said, as a text message on your phone or through an app alert, is one way to do that.
Do you have any stories or examples of when you yourself or someone you know has had to respond while they're in an emergency situation in a public space?
I was not at the office that day, but there was an evacuation that had to happen in my office location, and I actually did get the alert over email and also as a text message, and everything was fine. It was just as a precaution, but I was just, I mean, I was thinking at the time, I was like, oh my gosh, if I had been in the office, that would have been a stressful situation. And we, as our little unit of people who work at that location have just moved into that particular office. Uh-huh. And so I have the basics of things down, but I don't mm-hmm. know every area of that office building yet. And so I was just putting myself in that situation and thinking, oh my gosh, would I have been overwhelmed, or what would I have thought or felt like if I had been in that day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not thinking of anyone I know specifically who's been in that situation, but obviously we see these situations occurring on the news and things like that.
Yes. I was once on an orientation and mobility lesson. Actually, I was helping traffic engineers at Northern Illinois University at an intersection near the school, kind of analyze an intersection and explain to them why we really needed an audible pedestrian signal at that mm-hmm. intersection. And as we were doing that, the tornado siren ended up blaring itself.
Oh, wow.
And it actually wasn't a drill. And so at that time, one of the orientation and mobility professors, because I have a master's degree in vision rehabilitation therapy. And so one of the orientation and mobility professors just took it upon herself to say, hey, do you want human guide? I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to try to navigate this in, you know, navigate using a cane or a dog. I forget which I had at the time, if I had my dog with me or not. But I was like, yeah, a human guide would be amazing right now. And so that's how I chose to, because we had to leave the area and go into the school and take shelter. fortunately, nothing happened, and it was, you know, just a precaution. But that I can say that was those tornado sirens are really eerie.
They are,
and I was very, very grateful for my professors speaking up and asking if I wanted human guide, because I absolutely did.
And you would hope that someone would ask you. I can also envision somebody, because it happens even when there's not an emergency, but I can certainly envision it happening of somebody just grabbing you to, you know, to direct you, but it would probably feel like you're just being dragged along.
Absolutely.
And that might not be that welcome. And I know generally you try to discourage people, you know, from doing that, and it would be better if they would ask you, but in that situation, you might need to give them a little bit of grace and follow or accept the help, because I know sometimes folks are like, no, and it's perfectly fine if you're just walking through an airport or something and you really don't need the assistance.
Yes.
To say you don't, but in an emergency situation, having that sighted guide could be helpful.
Maybe begrudgingly accept the grab and then later on circle back to that person and thank them for their help. Absolutely. But then use it as an educational moment and say, just so you are aware, in the future, if you could not grab me, but maybe ask first and let me know that you're there and that you would like to offer assistance and ask if I need that, but don't grab me. And let them know why.
Another instance
I can speak to recently that it was a fire alarm in my apartment building, and I navigated. Fortunately for me, my unit is right across from one of the stairwells to go down out and outside, and so I did that. And I grabbed my cane, grabbed my guide dog. I healed her because I did not want to. The alarm was really loud, and I was like, "Let me just." I didn't want to put any more stress on either of us. And so I healed her down the stairs, and we got to a point where it was the bottom of the stairs, but I don't usually go out that way because it's not the general way to go outside of the building.
Right.
But it was not that the door wasn't to go out, was down this little hallway and kind of off diagonal from where I was at the time, but I couldn't remember. And I was like, oh my gosh, I am here, but I don't know where anybody else is, and I have to get out. And I was not panicking, but I was like, is somebody going to come? And finally someone did come and they said, would you like me to help you out? I said, absolutely. And so they, you know, gave me verbal directions and I was able to find the door. But it's just something that I don't do often, which is a reminder, I guess, to myself that I just need to do that every, you know, every few weeks or once a month, just go down those stairs completely and find that door. That way I know. But it was for a few seconds, which felt like hours, minutes.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, am I going to be stuck here? So.
Well, that's good that someone came along. And it's good that they asked you. They did the right procedure of asking you and not just
But it was
saying,
even hard to hear them, right? Because the alarm is blaring.
Oh, the alarms.
So that was like, oh, great. And like, I think someone's offering me help, but I don't really know. So it was definitely interesting. But then the other part of that too is, so I'm outside and I'm in the proper space to be when we're waiting for further direction. And I don't want to just go in when the alarm goes off because I don't know what's going on. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to, I don't have any vision myself. And so it was not really easy for me at all to even flag anyone down. And so fortunately, and I was not expecting the person who helped me get out of the building to stay there. Like, that's not that person's job, right? But I was thinking, how am I going to know without just kind of going in and maybe asking somebody? But I was worried about that too. I'm like, am I just going to be standing out here for forever? But fortunately, someone did come up and was able to help me figure that, like navigate that. Because that is also, and that can also be an added layer of stress. Right? You know you're safe, but then how do you know when to go back in if no one tells you?
Right. Yeah, if you don't know it's safe to go back in.
And I'm perfectly willing to ask, but how do I know that the person that is asking to ask is in my vicinity? I don't want to just ask anybody. You have to be careful with that these days, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, you want it to be somebody else who is also going back into the same building.
Exactly. Fortunately, this very nice woman stopped and said, "Can I help you?" I said, "Actually, yes. I don't know if we're supposed to go back into the building or not now." And she found one of the responders and was able to tell me, you know, what I needed to do. So I was very appreciative of my guardian angel that helped that day.
Oh, that's good. Are there any other ways that a person might be able to find emergency exits or accessible routes if you're traveling, like if you're in a airport or something like that? Do you ever find anything that's in Braille that would indicate an exit?
If there are things like that, I don't know about them, but that's also not something that I have either A, asked about, or B, taken it upon myself to even explore on my own.
I haven't seen that either. But as we were talking, it made me wonder, like, well, what if you were in the airport and you needed to go to the tornado shelter in the airport? How would you know? Where, I mean, here at DIA, they are the bathrooms pretty much, but how would you know that otherwise? So maybe
a lot of that information, unfortunately, or fortunately or unfortunately, is probably on the electronic signage, which is
I was going to say, I think there is some signage, but I don't know that there's any Braille or anything else with it. I don't know if they would make an announcement over the PA system if there was some kind of emergency within the airport.
And sometimes, maybe, depending on the emergency, it's not prudent to make an announcement. So there is that consideration as well.
That's true.
So it's a stressful situation all the way around, I feel like. But I think the most important thing, as we've mentioned, is to give yourself grace and try to be as flexible as you can. If it is in a situation and you're just really having a hard time navigating, you know, have like raising your hand, kind of waving it in the air, looking as frantic as you can. In some ways, hopefully would attract someone's
attention. Yeah, to get somebody's attention. Yeah.
Yes. But it is a very vulnerable, scary situation in places where you're not familiar with the area.
Well, I know you've mentioned previously about being left with your guide dog by, you know, an Uber or Lyft, you know, a transportation service that is supposed to take you, but they don't always do that. What advice do you have for folks? Because that can be really scary if you're just somewhere and you might not be able to get back into a building or maybe the opposite's occurred. They've let you out at the wrong spot and you're not sure where you are. So, you know, hopefully that's, depending where they've let you off, hopefully that's not a life or death situation, but it still can be, you know, very anxiety causing and create some panic.
It absolutely can. One thing I would say, first and foremost, get yourself to a safe situation. First and foremost, get yourself to a safe space, whether that's the building that you were just in or a surrounding business. One way to do that, fortunately, we have technology on our side a lot of the times today when it wants to cooperate, I should say. using a service that has... using a visual interpreter service such as Aira or Be My Eyes to help you kind of scan your surroundings, figure out where you are and how to get you to a safe location is a very, very handy thing. I have had to do that on several occasions. I usually will use Aira for something like that because they can pull up a map when you call. Granted, sometimes when you call them, where they have you pinpointed on the map is actually not where you are. And so sometimes you, as the explorer, as they call their users in Ireland, have to say to the agent or the visual interpreter, they've changed their name recently of what they refer to the visual interpreters as, the individuals assisting us. But you may have to take it upon yourself to mention to the visual interpreter, could you please just for a second or a few seconds not rely so much on the map, but just let me know, explain to me what you see in my camera feed, and then we can go back to the map once we have that in our bearings. That has helped me a lot because unfortunately, sometimes when I call, the person who is attempting to assist me may be so focused on the map and my point on the map may not be mm-hmm. actually where I am. Mm-hmm. And so I've had to navigate that, which can be frustrating because in a certain situation, you may feel like you're not in a safe situation and that person spending, it may be seconds, but it might feel like mm-hmm. minutes, looking at the map, which may or may not be helpful, might be frustrating. Whereas if they would just look at the camera feed and let you know what they're seeing, that may be more of a help to you in figuring out, okay, where am I? And then with Ira specifically, if you aren't really sure, if the building, let's say that you exited, is not open and you cannot enter it, they can look on Google Maps and find the nearest, let's say, coffee shop or mm-hmm. place of business that is open, and they can direct you to that by walking directions. Or even if it's not close enough to walk, you can link your rideshare apps to your Ira account, and they can dispatch the ride for you, and then watch on a map as that ride comes closer to you. So they won't prevent the denial from happening again, which hopefully right. They can't prevent the denial from happening again, which hopefully it doesn't. But in that situation, at least you can have the visual interpreter following the ride and making sure it shows up.
Yeah, they could at least let you know it was coming and how close it was to you.
Absolutely.
That would be helpful.
The other thing, once you are in a safe location, report what happened to the company, the rideshare company in question. If it is a denial of a ride because of your service animal, I strongly, strongly urge all of you listening to report that to the Department of Justice. There is a way to do that. There is a form to fill out. I am unfortunately extremely familiar with that form, but it matters. Just filling those out, it really matters as documentation that this actually is a real issue, because it is. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and they will go back to those reports to find evidence that changes need to be made or
yes,
policies enforced. So it is important to do that.
Because the claim, at least at one point, was, oh, it's not an issue. It absolutely is an issue. But if you do not have the data to back that up, mm-hmm. then you don't really have a case as much, if at all. And so it really does matter. It really does matter. And so I like to tell people, file with the company in question, the rideshare company in question, and report to the Department of Justice. And it takes extra steps, yes, but it's worth it, because not only was my dog denied a ride and I was denied a ride, but my rights as a human being who is able to travel with my service animal were violated, and I was discriminated mm-hmm. as a passenger of mm-hmm. the rideshare company, and that is not okay. And my rights were violated. Mm-hmm. All the things, not okay.
Right. And I think that's something that may be a time where you don't show as much grace to be able to say, no, this really is not okay. And
yeah, you don't need to show grace for that. There are things that you should show grace for. That is not one of them.
Yeah. That's not an area. It's good to report that.
Yes. If you get charged too,
I've had friends that, they let the service dog in the car, and then all of a sudden, unbeknownst to the person, there's this extra cleaning charge for the dog. That's kinds of things too.
That has never happened to me, but that has happened to many, many people I know, and absolutely report that. In fact, when I report rides that have been denied to the rideshare companies in question, I will bring up what I just mentioned. It's not just about the dog not being allowed in the car. There actually are bigger issues at play here. I mean, first of all, federal law is being violated. It's not just rideshare policy. Mm-hmm. It's federal law in the United States. And again, my rights as a human being are being violated and I'm being discriminated against. So it's just, it's bigger than, oh, rideshare policy. No. Yes, but no. That's like the tip of the iceberg, in my opinion. There are much more powerful things and stronger arguments for why this is not okay that stem beyond rideshare policy.
Definitely very important. So looking at maybe staying informed in emergencies or, and even there may be things overlooked. What would you say, or what, in your opinion, do you think is the most overlooked aspect of emergency preparedness if it comes to public transit and whether it's ride shares or buses or airports that people struggle with?
The first thing that really comes to mind is having the places of business in question or authorities in question reaching out to those of us who have disabilities and bringing us into the conversations around planning what emergency preparedness looks like at those places.
I could see where that would be really important and might take some advocacy to get them to do that. I don't have a lot of faith that they would do that on their own, although I think some do, but not all.
Right. But I do, that is the very first thing that comes to mind. There are things that we can do as people who have low vision or who identify as blind, but really and truly it's more times than not, it's the other people not willing to reach out and say, oh my gosh, come to the table. We want you involved. Do it. It's not rocket science. It's mm-hmm. really not.
Are there any resources that you would recommend for listeners who want to advocate, who've been in these situations and they want to more proactively advocate for changes and for being included in those conversations?
Look around and figure out what organizations are in your area related to your city or your town and find out when they have meetings and show up. Affiliate yourself to the level that you're comfortable with the local blindness agencies, whether they are consumer-based or whether they are the consumer organizations, the American Council of the Blind or the National Federation of the Blind or your state or local blindness agencies, let them know that you're out there and you want to advocate for better emergency preparedness services in your area and work with them to make a plan to do that. There is power in numbers and we don't have to do this alone. And, even networking with other people who maybe even be outside of your area and getting ideas together that you can take back to those in your area and share with them. This is something that this person does in their area. I'd like to see if we can do it here. Mm-hmm. But show up to where the meetings are, show up to where the conversations are. If you don't know where that is, reach out to someone that you know who may be able to help you. If that person doesn't know the answer, they probably know someone who does, and so they could reach out to that person. So, and don't take no as your first answer, as your only answer. Keep mm-hmm. asking people until you find someone that says yes, that they will help you.
That's good advice. It definitely takes more than one call or more than one conversation most of the time to affect change like that and to get it. A seat at the table, basically.
Yes, and demand that seat at the table. It's okay. Mm-hmm. That is also not anything you need to feel like you need to have grace for. You're allowed to be at the table and show up and be there. And if there isn't a chair for you, bring your own and say, I'm here. So there you go.
I like that. Bring your own chair.
Yeah. Bring your own table. I don't know.
If you have to, right?
Bring your own table and bring your own person who can sit with you at the table. And then, you know, it starts with one person, and where there is one person, there are more people. Because you know someone, mm-hmm. and that person knows someone. You may know two people, and those two people may know two people. So it will exponentially grow itself, and the movement around advocating for better emergency preparedness practices and approaches in your area may actually be easier to figure out than you think. It may take a little bit of work to start figuring it out, but once you find enough people to help you, you can spread out the work, and hopefully it won't be as daunting. And it's mm-hmm. definitely important to do in terms of the work. So it's definitely important to undertake the work to make it a better situation for all involved. It's a stressful situation being in an emergency as it is, but there are things that can absolutely be done to make it less stressful in navigating it when it needs to be navigated.
You had mentioned a couple of apps, Iris and Be My Eyes, that can be helpful. I also was starting to wonder when you were talking about, well, they can, you know, they can help you and tell you if your rideshare is coming. Like, if they would be able to help you if you were in a public space and you needed help, like navigating and knowing what was in front of you, if they could look at what's through your camera, if they could help you, and would they help you in that type of situation?
Yes, they would be able to help you with telling you what's in front of you. They are not a replacement for your orientation and mobility skills or your orientation and mobility aids, your cane, your guide dog, but they absolutely would help you with that. Also, if you don't use either of those apps, whether just video chat on your iPhone or your Android phone, FaceTime, Google Meet, something, you know, connecting with a friend or a family member over that kind of a connection. You know, it doesn't have to be that complicated.
Yeah. And then they would know where you are. Because, you know, sometimes you know that your friend or loved one is in an area where something has occurred and you're wondering how they are, and they would know then that what was happening. So that can be a good thing too, just to connect with someone. Are there any other particular apps or technologies that you use? I know maybe in last week's episode you mentioned, you know, some weather apps that give you warnings of those types of emergencies. There are other things that you would recommend to folks?
There are different weather apps. I don't have any specific that come to mind, but there are several of them that will give notifications. And sometimes the operating systems in and of themselves will give you notifications of weather events or emergency alerts. So and as I said, signing up for local alerts in your area via text message or even with a certain app, maybe your workplace has an app system an app ecosystem that they use for getting emergency information out to you. And so asking about that in your city or town, going to your city or town's website, calling them on the phone, asking what they might have. Usually there's something available.
I think usually there might be more if you're in a metro area. There, with the variety of cities, there might be more that you could sign up with. You might want to sign up at your work location and at your home location. But I think even in rural areas, they often have, you know, the county would have something you could sign up for.
Yes. And it may not be publicized on a website, but that is also why I mentioned calling them.
Mm-hmm. And being sure to ask.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Any final thoughts, Liz, as we wrap up this second episode?
I just want to repeat to give yourself grace, and emergency situations are stressful for everyone, you know, whether we are people that have disabilities or not. Yes, there are different constraints that we, as people who have disabilities, whatever they might be, but specifically those of us who identify as blind or low vision, there are specific things that we need to think about that others may not, but it's doable. and it doesn't have to be stressful. And there are techniques and strategies and people out there that will help to make a really stressful situation not as stressful.
Well, thank you, Liz, so much for all your expertise and your advice on this topic. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And thank all of you for listening. You may have your own tips and advice or experiences that you've had in terms of dealing with the emergencies. We would love to hear that. If you want to reach out to us at our feedback line or through info@aftersight.org, we'd love to hear things that you have to share as well. And then if you have some great resources, we'll be sure to share those out with everybody because we'll be continuing on with this month talking about emergency preparedness and things you can do to feel like you have a little bit of control in situations that usually feel very out of control. So we hope that the information you've gotten so far is helping you to navigate your life with vision loss.